All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am your host, Spencer Sutton, and I'm glad to be back here with you. It's amazing to me that it's almost, we're almost halfway through 2022, and it's been a wild ride. It's been a great ride so far this year, and we've got a lot of things exciting happening here at Evernest. Just want to give you a couple of updates. If you're interested in Birmingham property management, you may be interested in a little market just north of us called Huntsville. Now, Huntsville is on a lot of people's radar. It has been for a while. It's got incredible jobs. And as a matter of fact, last week, U.S. News and World Report just published an article and ranked Huntsville, Alabama, as the number one place to live in America. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable. So the news is that we have moved operations up to Huntsville. It's only taken us about a decade to do that, but really we're starting to buy investment properties for some folks up there and wanted to make that available to everybody. So we're going to be managing properties. We're going to be buying and selling properties in Huntsville. So we're really excited about that. And then we just announced we opened up in Kansas City. So we are now buying investment properties and managing properties in Kansas City and also in Orlando. So a lot of great things happening. This is just all in the past 30 days. So that brings us to 17 or 18 markets that we're in and rapidly expanding. If you want to hear more about those markets, you can check out our other podcast called the Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast. We do a lot of kind of backgrounds on these markets for investors. So if you're interested in learning more about some of these other places, then feel free to check it out. But today, for our purposes, we are going to be talking about something that I think is very, very important. And the reason why I think it's important is because so much of our time and energy as investors initially is focused on acquisitions, right? So we're constantly thinking about properties. We're constantly thinking about our buy box. We're thinking about making offers. We're negotiating offers. We're thinking about rehabs. We're like pricing everything out. We're getting inspections done. I mean, there's so much energy and attention paid to this acquisition side of the business, which is very important. But we also need to pay equally as important attention to the other side of the equation, and that is the resident side, the tenant side of this business. Because in our opinion, what we really do think is that your resident or your tenant is the number one asset, right? So it's not necessarily your property, although your property is, yes, it's an asset, but your resident is the asset. And I want to talk to you about this. I'm going to walk you through the life cycle of a resident so you understand each step along the way of what this means for you. Like if you want to build a real business out of rental properties, then you need to understand the life cycle to get this right, because it's going to be highly important for you as an investor to keep residents in your properties as long as you possibly can. Good residents. I'm not going to just say any resident. You want to keep the best residents in there as long as you possibly can, because there's something that will kill your returns from an investment standpoint is what I call tenant churn. So this just means residents moving in and moving out of your properties every 12 months. Like you will never come out ahead if you continually do this. And so there's a lot of things that go into this. There's a lot of like tactical things that I'm going to share with you today that I think are really, really important. But then also you just need to, from a mindset shift, you need to start thinking about your resident as the asset. How can you make their stay as pleasant as possible? And I would say this, like if you're a landlord, let's say you're a local investor and you are building your own portfolio, I'm going to say you're probably at a disadvantage when it comes to larger property managers in the area. Because the reason is because residents typically know and trust. They can look at reviews and know and trust before they enter into a lease contract. They can go and read reviews and feel good about dealing with someone who's been in business for a long time, who has good reviews, who seems to be a reputable property manager. And so if you, if they go to our, find us on Google and they see that we have over 1,000 five-star reviews, then that is going to be better for them, like going to set them at ease more than just dealing with you as an individual. So I say all this to say it's really, really important. If you want to manage your own properties, if you want to do this yourself, you need to understand the tenant life cycle and how you can best keep a resident in there for the long term. Because there's definitely, I would say there are some advantages to being a single landlord that is that you have a handful of properties you're managing yourself. Again, though, you do need to treat it like a business, but you can really tailor it and customize it. So let's start walking through what this looks like. So once the acquisition phase is over, really the clock starts ticking when that property becomes yours, right? So the first stage or the first phase of this is vacancy. First part of the life cycle is vacancy. This is number one. And this is just where you're making no money. Right? This is a horrible place to be. You do not want to stay in vacancy long. And so what you need to be thinking about as an investor is you need to be thinking about you're a marketer. Like, how can I market this property? What can I do to market this property to get as many eyeballs on it as quickly as possible and to generate enough interest in this as soon as possible? So I'm going to say first, it's going to start with the condition of the property. You need to pay really special attention to this. Now, you should have done your homework in the acquisition phase. You should be choosing an area that people want to live in. You should be choosing a type of house they want to live in. You should be making sure that you're mitigating all the risk involved with buying a property that is not suitable for a resident, whether that be it's a properties right next to train tracks or power lines or steep driveway or funky layout or busy road. We've named all these before in previous podcasts, but just want to bring those to your attention. So the first part is in the acquisition phase, just making sure that the property you buy is the right property. But now that you own it, you need to think like a marketer. What are the colors that are going to be most acceptable, going to be most neutral, going to be most desirable to residents? And so you want to make sure that you have those colors in your property. Is the property clean? Does everything work? Because you'll have people come in there to walk the property and they will try things out. They'll turn on the faucet. They'll flip light switches and things. So you need to make sure, the simple thing is you need to make sure utilities are on, that your water's running, that your electricity's on, that they can actually do that. And again, you're starting to think like a marketer. So maybe you start thinking about, hey, before I show it to a resident, I'm going to light some candles. I'm going to do some things to make it like that the experience as they walk through it is very pleasant. You want to make sure that the landscaping is clean and neat and that it doesn't have trash built up outside. There's no trash in the trash cans or things littered outside. You want to make sure the grass is cut. All of these things are very, very important because you are trying to generate interest right off the bat. So vacancy is a big deal. So you think like a marketer and get this property like prepared, get it ready. And then the next thing within vacancy is you're going to have to not only get the property ready, you're going to have to price it the right way. This is going to take, in today's market with as much appreciation, rental appreciation as we've seen over the past 12 to 24 months. It's really kind of crazy because even some of the reports that you can download are a little suspect. You really need to get boots on the ground. You need to have somebody on the ground who knows the rental market, but you need to price that property correctly because if you're overpriced, I can promise you that you're not going to get anybody coming to view the property. Residents are really smart when it comes to understanding what they should be paying in a particular area of town. And so understanding those two things are going to be the two of the most important aspects. And then when you think about vacancy, you want to start thinking of just the ability for somebody to go see the house. You need to make it easy for somebody to go visit that house and walk through the property. All of those things are going to be very important so that you can rent it as quickly as possible. Now, how long is it going to take? This is a question we get asked all the time. Right now our median days on market is like 14 or 15 days, but it just depends. Like if you get the pricing wrong, if you get if the house is not in good shape, it could take you 60 days, 90 days to rent that property. And eventually you're probably going to have to start price dropping it. And so even if you, if the house is priced correctly, but it's not in good shape, guess what? You're going to have to lower that price to make up for the fact that your property is not in great shape. So things to remember in vacancy, think like a marketer, get that property ready as quickly as possible. And I'm calling this the tenant life cycle because in vacancy, they're looking. And so we got to be thinking about them in regards to them looking for a property. So now that you're marketing it, now that you're getting applications, the second phase of the cycle is screening. It's screening residents. And this is extremely important. Obviously, you're going to need to do this. You're going to need to follow fair housing. You're going to need to screen everybody the exact same way. And you're going to have to follow the law on this. And so make sure you're up to date and understand what the law is before you start asking residents questions, before you start having them fill out applications, before you start walking them through the property. Like, you need to absolutely understand this. And then as you're collecting applications, you are going to want to make sure you're doing the right thing. So do you have an income to rent ratio that you want to make sure that the resident meets? Do you want to have a credit score? You want to definitely make sure that their background is clear and clean. And what that means for us is they haven't had any evictions and that they have no felonies and no violent misdemeanors. So you're going to need to do a background check along with a credit check. You're going to need to check and verify their employment. Make sure they're still in that job. And, you know, if you're, you just want to, like, hopefully anybody that you're screening, they are working at a well-established place where you can call and you know that you're talking to the right person. You want to avoid calling somebody's friend who says they work for them. That's not a good idea. We've had that happen where people try to fool us. So be careful there. And then if you want to, you can definitely call previous landlords and ask them about their experience. Typically, the best questions to ask are objective questions. So an objective question is, would you rent to this resident again? Like, that's a very, very simple question. And again, make sure it's not their best friend or their cousin or somebody like that. Just, you know, make sure they're giving you somebody that they have truly rented before. And then, of course, it's great if they've rented from an established company. So that is phase two. That's just the screening and the application part. And then comes the leasing, right? So this is all about leasing this property, getting them to sign a lease. So you need to make sure that your lease is simple, that it's well spelled out. I was talking with Gray Hall the other day, and we were actually talking about this very subject, and we were talking about how important it is to set expectations in the lease. So sitting down with somebody and walking them through the main points of the lease, and something that we've done in the past, I don't know if we still do it, but something we've done in the past is at the end of the lease, we had just a summary. Like, it wasn't necessarily a part of the contract that they had to sign, but it was a summary of the top 10 things that they needed to know. And they were all of the important things: when rent was due, how to take care of the property, you know, maintenance issues, you know, things like that. So we had a summary of the clearest of clear expectations. So this leasing, this is a part of the leasing process. And then once they sign that, then they move into the next stage, stage four of the tenant life cycle, and that is the move in. This is a really important time for both of you because, you know, if you've ever moved, you understand the stress that comes with moving everybody's belongings from one place to another. Well, this is exactly what a resident's going through. And so they are super stressed. You need to make it as simple as possible. Now, you want to make sure that once they sign that lease, they're going to pay a security deposit equal to 1 month's rent typically. And they're going to pay you first month's rent or prorated rent. Now, if it's towards the end of the month, I would go ahead and make them pay the next month's rent. You want to collect those two things, security deposit, first month's rent, before you give them keys. This is after they've signed the lease agreement. They've established a move-in date. I'm going to tell you that I would give a buffer from the time they signed that and paid, that give you enough buffer to walk through the property one more time. And you're trying to do this. You want to do this because this is highly important. You can set this entire relationship off in the wrong direction if they move in and there's a lot of things wrong with the property. So be thinking about this, right? You want to be thinking about making sure, again, utilities are going to be switched into their name, but make sure that the faucets are working, all the light switches are working, light bulbs are in everything. You want to make sure the disposal works, that everything's clean in the house. You don't have any dead bugs anywhere. You want to make sure the hot water works. I mean, we've had people move in before and the hot water wasn't working, and that's just a nightmare. Or the water wasn't on, and then they couldn't take a shower after they'd sweated. And so that's going to set your relationship. The tone of your relationship is going to be set during this move-in period, right? So signing the lease is one thing. Move-in is when the rubber meets the road. So make sure you take you walk through that property. I would say it's going to be highly important for you to take pictures as you walk through that property and document those pictures. This is exactly how we found how we turned over the property in the condition we turned over the property. And so on the front end, you want to be clear with the resident what you're going to charge for tenant-related damage versus just normal wear and tear, right? So holes in the wall, tenant-related damage. Carpet ripped, tenant-related damage. Smudges and smears on the wall, that's normal wear and tear. You know, you're going to be able to know the difference, but you need to spell it out with the residents so that they're also well aware. Take those pictures, get very, very clear about how you're turning this property over. And then you also want to have instructions about how they need to handle maintenance. So you need to handle this in the move during the move-in process. This is exactly how you're going to handle maintenance requests or maintenance issues. Hopefully for you as an investor, you have made sure that the property is in great shape. That what you don't want is for the first thing when they move in, day one or week one, for them to call in a maintenance request. Like, you're going to get frustrated. They're going to get frustrated. It's not going to be great. And again, our whole mentality is we want this person to stay in the property as long as possible. As long as they're paying on time, we want them to stay in the property as long as you are wanting to keep this house occupied. So if it's 5 years, I mean, I've had a resident stay 10 years. I've had a resident stay 9 years. I've had a resident stay 1 year. I can promise you the 1 year is no fun because there's a turn every year and it's miserable. So you want to make sure that all of this stuff is handled up front. And then we move into the fifth stage, and that is occupancy. Okay. So the ultimate goal of the first four stages is to get to this fifth stage, which is they are living in the home and paying you rent on a monthly basis. I would, you know, we've talked about this before in previous podcasts. I would definitely set aside money for rental. You know, you're going to have to set aside money for maintenance. You're going to have to set aside money for CapEx expenditures, things like roof, HVAC, those big ticket items. So be sure you're doing that from day one, or you already have it, because you're going to get maintenance requests. Okay, so just one thing that I would do is obviously I would set up preventative maintenance if possible, HVAC inspections, gutter cleanings, things like that. I would go ahead and have those things in place to prevent longer term issues, or you know, if you have your HVAC checked and maintenance done on it, you're going to hopefully avoid an emergency situation on July 4th when the air goes out. That wouldn't be good here in the South. So again, this occupancy is a really big deal. We've written an article and we may have even recorded a podcast here on how to keep a tenant for 20 years based on our friend Robert Locke, who has done this. I've never kept one for 20 years, definitely 10. And he just outlined, but the essential mindset was he was looking at the resident as the asset. And so he would do things like send appreciation notes. So if you're a landlord, if you're an investor doing this yourself, I would, if I were you, I would try to make the resident feel special without feeling creeping them out, but try to make them feel special on occasion. We used to write handwritten notes. We used to send cards and to people. We used to send Starbucks gift cards to residents on their birthday before we got way too big to do that. And it'd been too expensive. But you, as a landlord, if you're doing this individually, you can absolutely send them different gifts and different things throughout the year that just say, hey, I really do appreciate you. And I can tell you, nobody else is going to do that. If we're managing for you, you can request that from us, and we will do that. We'll send a gift card or something like that. Hey, the owner wanted you to have this. That absolutely makes them feel good about the decision they made. And again, if they've lived in other places, they've not ever had this done before. So I can promise you that. So occupancy is real, very, very important. And again, communication is really important. How are you communicating with the resident? Are they texting you, calling you? A really good resident typically doesn't want to hear from you, and they just want their concerns or their issues handled in a timely manner. So if you can agree to do that, then you shouldn't have nightmare scenarios like you hear from so many people. So after occupancy, obviously, what we start to do about 120 days out is we start to contact the resident and the owner and start asking the owner, hey, are you okay keeping this resident in here? If you're doing this yourself, then you want to start reaching out to the resident, talking to them about renewing the lease. If you've decided to give a rent increase, you need to determine what is reasonable. Now, it doesn't really matter what the market's done. You need to decide what's reasonable, because there are going to be some people that are like, I won't afford to do that, or they don't think it's worth it, and so they'll move out. So you just need to decide that, because there's some areas of town that are going to be very high appreciation and you're going to see rents increase dramatically. And then there's going to be some other areas that are not going to increase near as much. So if the resident, and this is the sixth leg of the cycle is what we're on, if the resident decides to end their tenancy, then they're going to need to turn in at least a 30-day notice. And so when that happens, then you're going to be getting ready for them to move out, and you're going to want to walk the property. You're going to have a certain number of days before you have to give them that security deposit back. So what you want to do is you want to go through when they move out. You want to make sure you get the keys. You want to change the locks. You want to go walk through the property again, and you want to take pictures of anything that you believe is out of the ordinary, if it's tenant related damage. And then you're absolutely going to want to, show them pictures and then give them back the security deposit less the cost of any what you believe is tenant related damages in the home. And you need to itemize that and tell them what it's for. And so that detailed quote or whatever it is, what it's going to cost you should hold up in court if they decide to dispute that with you. But this is going to be a really good way for you to end. If you have a tremendous amount of integrity and you're doing this the right way, then there are chances that even if you are withholding some of this security deposit, they're going to refer friends that they know to your house, to your houses. You'll get a good name, a good reputation in these resident communities, like people who are renting in certain areas of town. Then they won't more than likely be as afraid of renting from you as an individual as maybe from a larger property manager. They obviously know our reputation, and it's easier for them to rent from us. So tenancy ends. You need to be prepared to do all that, to handle all that. And then lastly, the last, cycle or the last step in the cycle is just that they move out. And once they move out, you want to get utilities back on in your name. And this is when vacancy starts back over again. So if I were drawing a circle, and we actually do have an illustration of this called the resident life cycle. If you or life cycle of a tenant, if you go to evernest.co/the-tenant-lifecycle, you can read this article that we have that we've written. You can look at the diagram and you'll just see it starts with vacancy. It ends with the move out and then you're right back to vacancy. And this whole thing starts over again. So your goal as an investor is to make this life cycle, even though it has seven steps, if you can turn that from a one-year life cycle to a five-year life cycle, a seven-year life cycle, I'll tell you, it's going to help your returns dramatically. And keep your, as long as you're keeping your property in good shape. One other thing that I would mention in here that I didn't mention during this, as we were talking earlier, is that during the occupancy stage of the life cycle, I would most definitely set up to have inspections done maybe once a year, where you're walking through the property. You want to be able to catch anything that potentially could turn into a problem down the road. I had a property one time where the resident, it was down in the basement and it was just a small little leak down there, some water that they didn't think was that big of a deal. So it was ignored. Well, they never really went down there. So when they moved out, after a few years, they moved out. This thing had totally turned into a major sheetrock issue with mold. And so I had to have all of that sheetrock and everything ripped out of the house, out of the basement, and re-sheetrock, waterproof, as actually had happened because of some gutter issues. So these things, these little things can add up. So preventative maintenance, getting the house checked out once a year, walking through the property is going to be highly important for you. And I would encourage you to do that. So if you have any questions, if we can help you with anything with the resident life cycle, tenant life cycle, don't hesitate to reach out to us. You can email us at sales@evernest.co. We'd love to talk to you about your property. We'd love to help you keep residents as long as possible. And hopefully, if this has been of any help to you, go leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back again with another episode in another month.